Welcome to SBNM is Here, the State Bar of New Mexico's official podcast. In this series, we'll discuss topics such as professional development, tools of the legal trade, and mental and professional well-being. Connecting the legal community across New Mexico, SBNM is here. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to SBNM is Here. This is Morgan Pettit, Member Services Manager and Podcast Producer. So this is our last episode of season two, and I've specifically been holding on to this particular episode to wrap up the year. Particularly back in late 2020, I conducted a survey on what content you, as our members, wanted to hear. And overwhelmingly, the feedback was that you all wanted to hear from members of our judiciary. And sure enough, that's just what we did. This episode marks half of season two, hearing directly from the judiciary. So we've technically had 13 episodes, six of which, almost half, are from the judiciary. We've heard from Chief Justice and his reflections on the pandemic, on the practice of law. Judge Levy provided insights into family court. Judge Lamar shared common cases in the first district and what it means to be a judge. And we were fortunate enough to hear from four of our new criminal court judges and coming onto the bench in such unique times. To all those who have participated, thank you again tenfold, truly, for volunteering your time to contribute to this podcast. For this episode, we are honored to hear from the 2021 appointed Children's Court judges. Judge Begay is the first Indigenous woman appointed to our court, and Judge Robertson comes from the Public Defenders. Retired Judge Romero interviews them both as we get to learn more about them as individuals, what Children's Court entails, and what I think is truly a wonderful discussion on well-being and self-care in an emotionally charged court. Again, thank you to Cindy Hill from Second Judicial for arranging three of my episodes this year. You are truly fantastic. Finally, thank you to all of our listeners, and we really look forward to season three. I've talked plenty, so now on to this wonderful episode. Judge Romero, feel free to take it away.
Thank you, Morgan. Let's get started by asking each of you to introduce yourselves to our listeners. We know, of course, that you're new judges. You were appointed this last January of 2021, but tell us what you did before you became a judge. And if you'd like, you know, and if you're so inclined, you can even tell us what you did before you became an attorney and what prompted you to get involved in the field of law and eventually to become judges. Let's begin with Judge Begay.
Good morning, Judge Romero. Thank you very much. And thank you to everybody for letting me be here today to introduce myself to our legal community. My name is Judge Catherine Begay. I am a member of the Navajo Nation and also a member of the Children's Court here in Bernalillo County. I have been on the bench since January of 2021, but before that, I was a hearing officer with the same court for 3 years. So I had the opportunity to learn at some of the feet of some of our best judges there, like Judge Romero, Judge Ward, Judge Parnell. And so I was able to see how they conducted their hearings and to have the benefit of that teaching. So prior to becoming a hearing officer, I was an attorney in private practice. I had my own law firm. I represented parents and children in abuse and neglect cases. I represented adults and children in delinquency cases, in adult criminal cases, and on their appellate appeals cases. Prior to that, I was a student at UNM, so this is my first career, and I'm proud that this is where I'm at today. Thank you, Judge Romero.
Thank you. Judge Robertson, same question.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. I was inspired. I'm going to start off with why I went to law school. I was inspired by an attorney by the name of Oscar Zeta Acosta. He's also known as the Brown Buffalo. I learned about him in, I believe, a Chicano studies class, Mexican Americans and the Law, I think was the title of it. And he was the attorney for the Chicano rights movement. And far from perfect man, to put it lightly, but he played such a big role in that movement. And I was really inspired by what attorneys can do. And I didn't learn about the Chicano rights movement in grade school, unfortunately. And I didn't learn about it from my parents either. They were both immigrants and unfortunately didn't teach me about that, as they weren't really a part of it, I think. But that was the first time that I was exposed to it. And I just knew that that was how I wanted to make a difference in the world. And so I went to law school. After law school, I started at the public defenders. I thought that criminal law was what I wanted to do. And then I was transferred to the juvenile division. And I really found my passion there, working with young people, with children and families. And that passion really extended way past the courtroom. I became involved with as much as I could because I knew that this is what I wanted to do. And I wanted to, you know, help and not just help, you know, the clients that I had, but also try to improve the entire system for those clients, for their families, and for our entire community. So that is what I did before getting on the bench. And I can say that being a judge now, I'm so excited because I feel like it's the next step in my work.
Thank you both. And you know, having served in children's court, I think I used to say every now and then, none of us is going to get rich and famous being in children's court, but we're doing this because we make a difference, and not just in the lives of one particular client, but in families. And that is a passion that each of you have demonstrated, both in your work as a public defender, Judge Robertson, and Judge Begay as a public, you know, as a juvenile public defender, but also in your work that you do now. You know, as children's court judges, you all are dealing with an area of the law, actually two areas of the law that most people don't realize come into court, juvenile justice or delinquency cases and abuse and neglect cases. But can you give us an overview of the types of cases that you hear in children's court and what the public may or may not know about them? Judge Begay?
Thank you, Judge Romero. We do a number of different cases in children's court that range from abuse and neglect cases. So when children come into CYFD, Children, Youth, and Families Legal Custody, due to allegations of abuse and neglect. We do the delinquency cases when kids get themselves in trouble in the community. The community has the ability through the DA's office to come to court and file a petition. We also do adoptions, emancipations, and a number of different cases. I'll let Judge Robertson talk about those, but I wanted to talk with you about the abuse, neglect, and delinquency cases because they take up the majority of our docket. I think we all know this from the different news reports that we have, that New Mexico has a lot of struggles a lot with child well-being. And we see that from the different reports that come out every year. We hear that in legislative sessions. We hear that in work groups working on this, where the goal is to try to find better outcomes for children and their families while they're living here in New Mexico. We want children to grow up safe and healthy and supported and educated so that they can give back to their community in the future. And so that's where I feel like the children's court comes in. We are at the intersection of where children first come in contact with the system when their parents need that support in the community, whether it's being homeless or not being able to attend school, maybe parents struggling with mental health issues, substance abuse issues, and you know, just some of the struggles that they have where children end up bearing the brunt of that. The system and children's court is not meant to punish those parents. It's meant to help them provide services in the community, a network of support so that these parents can continue that relationship they have with their child while correcting some of the behaviors that were having a negative impact on their children. And so the abuse and neglect system is really important and critical to that work. And the children's court judges are critical to that work as well, to oversee the timeline of those cases to make sure that those services are provided timely, accurately, and for the safety of the children long-term. For the delinquency cases, Judge Romero, these I think are the ones that maybe the community knows a little bit better. These are the ones that are oftentimes on the news when children get in trouble. We always hear arguments about, you know, we need a different system. This is just a slap on the wrist. That's not true. As a judge in children's court and as someone who practiced in children's court representing children in delinquency cases, it is much more than a slap on the wrist. The goal is to holistically look at that family and look at the needs of that child and say, how can we correct this behavior so that it doesn't come back again, so that we don't have that continuing pattern into adult court? And I think that the collaboration between the children's court, juvenile probation, community providers, the DA's office, and the defense attorneys really speak to that we all have the children's best interest in mind when we're making decisions, when we're working on these cases, when we're communicating with the public about them, that children's court is actually the right place for these cases to be handled by people who bring their knowledge of child psychology and empathy and concern about community safety all to the table to try to find the right outcomes for children. Thank you.
Before we hear from Judge Robertson about adoptions and a couple of other matters, Judge Begay, I know that as a special master, you presided over a mental health docket. If you could briefly tell us about that, because that's something the public generally is unaware of as a matter being under the purview of Children's Court.
Yes, I'm so glad that you brought that up, because that is an important work of the court that the public almost never sees. They are sequestered cases, which means that they are not out there for public consumption, for people to review the record. But there is a lot of work that is being done by the mental health facilities here in the city of Albuquerque in coordination with the doctors and UNM Law School, and then in coordination with the DA's office and the court to make sure that people who are suffering from mental health issues, where there is a severe break, where either they are off medication or they are threatening harm to themselves or to others, where there is a risk to themselves or to others. It's really important that the court be able to help intervene at that moment to keep the community safe and to keep the patient safe themselves. So those mental health hearings happen. And the children's court is involved in that work. Many times, it's not just adults who are seen on that docket, it's also children. And so having experts who have worked with children in this area, who understand their needs, who understand that maybe they are at the cross section of parents with mental health issues or parents who may be involved in the abuse and neglect system, being able to bring that experience to the table when deciding their cases is critical.
Thank you. Judge Robertson, I know that you have a great interest in the adoption arena, and not just adoptions that come out of the neglect and abuse work, but private adoptions and others that come up, if you could tell us about that.
Thank you, Judge Romero. Yes, as Judge Begay mentioned, we also preside over adoption cases. Most of them are stemming from the abuse and neglect system, but many of them are step-parent adoptions or independent adoptions. And these are people that come to us to formalize those, you know, parent-child relationships that already exist in many cases. We also preside over emancipation cases. These are cases where young people who are already financially supporting themselves seek an order from the court so that they can enroll themselves in school, sign up for health insurance. These orders give them that legal document that says that, you know, for these purposes, they are an adult, and, you know, these community entities like schools and doctors need to consider them as adults. We also preside over fostering connection cases. These are cases, these are cases that involve CYFD and young adults who have aged out of the foster care system. And they enter into voluntary services and support agreements. And the court provides oversight to those agreements making sure that CYFD provides active efforts to, you know, help these young people transition from, you know, childhood into adulthood as successfully as possible.
Thank you for bringing up the fostering connections. I know too often the system, which, you know, the courts are a part of, is criticized for once a kid turns 18 and they have no follow-up, that, you know, and I know most of us, especially yours truly as a parent, as a grandparent, I can't think of any kid that at 18 is ready to be cut out into the world without any support, without any encouragement from adults in their lives. So thank you all for doing that very important work. I know that both of you are involved in organizations that work in juvenile justice and child welfare, both in New Mexico and nationally. Judge Robertson, can you tell us about some of the organizations you're involved in and why you think that involvement is important to your work on the court?
Yes, thank you, Judge Romero. So I am an active participant of the Children's Court Improvement Commission committees. That work, I think, takes up many of my lunch meetings, but this is a group of people, of amazing people that are coming together that are giving their time to help improve many different aspects of children's court. I'm also a member of the Children's Court Rules Committee. We work at improving and creating rules for the system, trying to keep up with, you know, the ever-changing laws so that our courts can function better. For the Children's Court Rules Committee, I'm both on the Abuse and Neglect Subcommittee and the Delinquency Subcommittee because, you know, under the Children's Court Rules, they're divided by those two groups and more. I also serve on a project advisory board for the National Association for Drug Court Professionals and the National Council for Juvenile and Family Court Judges. These two organizations partner to bring best practices to juvenile drug courts across the nation. I served as the public defender liaison to the Juvenile Drug Court, drug treatment court here in Bernalillo County. And so when I transitioned to the bench, I stayed on that project advisory board in my new role. I really can't emphasize enough how important it is, I think, for lawyers to get involved in these organizations, these committees. We have a very specialized knowledge. And I think that we owe it to our entire community to improve the legal system, because I think that a better legal system serves everyone. But I think that we also owe it to the future lawyers to leave the legal system better than how we found it.
Judge Robertson, I believe if memory serves me correctly, you were also involved in the Juvenile Detention Alternatives Initiative, some of the general overriding committee, but some of the subcommittees. Briefly, can you tell us about that?
Yes, thank you, Judge Romero. I was on the board of the Reducing Racial and Ethnic Disparities subcommittee of the Bernalillo County JDAI initiative. I also participated in the Deep End committee. We worked at trying to reduce the overrepresentation of minorities in the system. We also tried to find solutions so that we can keep children out of detention, but instead serve them in the community in ways that kept the community safe and really helped guide the young people to a better path.
Thank you. And again, if memory serves me correctly, that involved a whole lot of collaboration, a whole lot of being forgiving and overlooking some things that other people might have said, and not a committee for thin-skinned people. So thank you for serving on that. Catherine, can you tell us a little bit about some of the organizations in which you've been involved? And I'm sorry, I think I'm one of the first ones that said, Judge Begay, get used to it. And here I am calling you Catherine, I apologize.
That's okay, Judge Romero. Actually, I wanted to start off talking about my involvement with the National Council of Juvenile and Family Court Judges. NCJ, FCJ is really critical and an important organization that I think all of our judges in our district are a member of. We have had the benefit, actually, New Mexico had the benefit of having Judge Romero, who is with us today, as a past president of the National Council of Juvenile Family Court Judges. He not only did he bring the national debates and the national developments to our attention here in New Mexico, to our small court, he didn't just share it with us, he shared it with us statewide. So all of the juvenile and family court judges were able to benefit from his leadership with NCJ, FCJ. But that really was what sparked my interest, Judge Romero, in that national organization. I saw your leadership there. I saw your involvement there. I saw the collaboration and the work that was able to be done on that national scale. And with your encouragement, I did get involved there as well. So I'm part of a couple of different, actually three different subcommittees, the Tribal State Consortium, attorneys who are, I'm sorry, judges who are judges in tribal court and state court. They come together and they work on some of those issues where there is the intersection of the different sovereigns. I am also on the diversity committee as well as I think it's the Children's Law Committee. So we do a lot of work there. We meet annually. A lot of it is in preparation for the annual meeting. I'm sorry, we meet monthly. A lot of it is in preparation for the annual meeting. And so through that work, we've been able to make a number of different contacts, and I feel supported by that organization. The other organization that I work with, I'm not a part of, is the Casey Family Programs. If anyone knows anything about children's law, that's an important support group out there. But most importantly for the work that I do in children's court, they are some of the biggest supporters of our Indian Child Welfare Act court, the ICWA court. It was through their education and encouragement and support even going forward to the most recent training. They have helped us build up our ICWA court to work with Native American families in abuse and neglect cases and to seek really good outcomes for them. I'm willing to talk about that more because I'm really proud of that work later on. I'm also part of the National American Indian Court Judges Association, NIJA, which is another organization, Judge Romero, you introduced me to. An organization of Native American court judges is really important for people of color, for people like me, who don't always have someone in their community who looks like them, who may be facing the same struggles. I can rely on some of these judges who have gone through that as well. I'm also a member of a number of different state bars here in New Mexico. The Indian Bar, the Black Lawyers Association, the LGBTQ Bar, all of which I try to contribute to as much as possible. But the work of the court, of course, is ever present. Let's put it that way. But like Judge Romero, like Judge Romero and Judge Robertson, I have worked with the JDAI, Judicial Detention Alternatives Initiative here in Bernalillo County in a couple of different ways. When I was a practicing attorney, I worked with the organization and participating and providing information. And then when I've been with the court, I've had a couple of different roles in different committees. I'm currently the deep end chair, but I'm also at the invitation of former senior Justice Barbara V. Hill was invited to attend the JDAI State to Scale. So we look at how are we going to roll out JDAI to the entire state. All children should have that same benefit. In my personal life, I'm also a board member of CASA-Q, which works with children here in New Mexico, young people who sometimes are homeless and don't have a place to go. That work is really important to me. I care about those children and I care about our community and the safety of young LGBTQ two-spirit children. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge Begay. And you know, just listening to each of you describe what you're involved in addition to your regular day job of being on the bench and hearing cases, I think that the rumor that judges have a 9-to-5 job and that you can go home at night and do other stuff, you all are busy all the time. And I You know, I think that it enhances your ability to be the best judge you can be on the bench and off the bench, because being a judge is not just being in chambers and being on the bench. And I'll have you all address that a little bit more later. And Judge Begay, you talked about the ICWA court, and I know that you're currently the presiding judge of that. And that sounds, you know, oh, great, there was an ICWA court and Judge Begay kind of stepped into that. But if you can tell us a little bit about how that developed and why the ICWA court is particularly important.
Sure. So Judge Romero, I always think it's important to give credit where credit is due. This is not a court that I started on my own and said, I have this wonderful idea, let's do it, let's implement it. This is a process that had been brewing for a long time and had been discussed and sort of mulled over by different people within our legal community, and in particular with you, Judge Romero, with Casey Family Programs. And I think Judge Parnell may have also been a part of that conversation early on, that our judges in the Children's Court here in Albuquerque saw that we had a very high number of Indian children who were in the department's legal custody, even though we are in a city in the middle of a metropolitan area in Bernalillo County, where we don't have any tribes in our county. We may be surrounded by tribes, but we found it sort of interesting that we had this high number and thought we need to be the judges who address these in a much better way and to really take to heart what ICWA means. And so those conversations started before even I started with a court, but as a special master, I got to watch how Judge Romero, you continued and encouraged that conversation with the department to change the way that they worked with ICWA cases to really be faithful to the law. And I think there was a turn at some point where the department said, we need to get on board, or it felt that way to me as someone who used to practice with them. And so even through the last administration, and I'm fingers crossed through this next one, I can't see why we wouldn't be, we're going to continue that work. The Indian Child Welfare Act was a statute that was put in place in 1978 to really remedy some of the past abuses that were inflicted on Native American families in separating their children from parents for reasons that were sometimes unjustified, or when looking through a very Anglo lens would have maybe seemed odd. Native people are different. Native people should be celebrated for their diversity and for their unique family situations, for their unique backgrounds, their unique culture and language, and ICWA intends to do that. So with the support of the court, we began building our ICWA court in January 2019, opened the doors on January 1st, 2020, and really intended on having a robust sort of specialty court working with Native American families. Of course, with the pandemic, we were no longer able to literally keep the doors open. We had to do this in a much more virtual format, but we still have been successful. Judge Romero, it probably doesn't surprise you, but we have been able to keep some of the things that you used to say in court all the time to participants, to keep children at home while we continue to work with their families and finding that support, including tribes in decisions that are being made about their children, supporting and educating the attorneys who work on these ICWA cases to know the language that they need to use, to know the arguments they need to use, for everyone to put on that different lens and to see things in a different way. We have been able, since January 1st, 2021, there have been no Native American parents in our program who have had their parental rights terminated. We have had guardianships set up with children and relatives rather than children being terminated and then adopted, sometimes away from their family and their tribes. We have worked really hard at being faithful to the Indian Child Welfare Act. And because it is the gold standard, Judge Romero, the work that you did on that, I think, has really set the stage for us to be able to say today that we have a successful program that has grown. We're hitting year two come January of 2023. And so we hope to see some success, some future success, continuing success. I'm proud of the ICWA Court. I am willing to talk about it to anybody that is willing to talk about it. And we have seen such success stories here that this can be recreated, not only for Indian children across the state of New Mexico, but because it's the gold standard, this can be created, recreated with non-Indian children as well. We just need to take the time to put on that new lens and work on these cases in that way. Judge Romero, thank you for letting me talk about this. It's so important to me and close to my heart. Thank you.
Thank you. And Judge Robertson, I know that the general subject of, you know, disproportionality and, you know, minorities, those who are otherwise disadvantaged come into our system. And there are some folks in the community who say, why are you concerned about that? You know, this is something from the past. I didn't have anything to do with the genocidal acts of our government. You know, why should we, Judge Robertson, in today's day and age, be concerned about what happened in the past and how we treat families who come into our court?
Thank you, Judge Romero. I think that because what happened in the past is still having an impact on our children and families today, we need to care about it. I think a big reason is because it's in our laws. It's written into the Children's Code that a purpose of the that code, of that act, is to reduce the overrepresentation of minorities in our system. And I did a lot of work on that in the delinquency side. We looked at the data, we saw where there was those, where those inequities existed. We looked at where those decisions were being made, and we tried to implement objective standards to that. And I am trying to bring that work now to the abuse and neglect side. I'm hopeful that actually CCIC, in general, the Children's Court Improvement Commission, can start addressing that soon. I am so excited for the Commission on Equity and Justice, started by Justice Bacon just, I think, this year. And I recently started participating in that, and specifically the data subcommittee, because I think it's important that we know where there's the most disparity in our system, so that we can address it.
Thank you all very much. One of the things that gets asked a lot by, you know, people sitting up at the 35,000 foot level of judges, what is your judicial philosophy? You know, how do you approach cases? So Judge Begay, you know, what is your judicial philosophy, if you'd like to talk about that, and how does that differ from juvenile justice cases to neglect and abuse cases?
So I've been thinking about this since you asked the question, and when I think about what I wanted to see, the type of judge that I wanted to see when I walked into a courtroom as an advocate, that's who I try to be today. I want to be a judge who is going to listen to the arguments, who welcomes the advocacy, who doesn't say, let's go, I've got 10 minutes for this hearing, put it on, put your show on, are you gonna do it or not? Is there gonna be a plea or not? That was not the judge that I wanted to be in front of, and that's not the judge that I wanna be when I'm on the bench. I think it's really important what Judge Robertson has said earlier, which is that it's the law that tells us what we as judges are allowed to do and not allowed to do. Being faithful to that law is what makes a good judge. Hearing the arguments, hearing the creativity from the attorneys, hearing that advocacy, hearing them argue passionately for their clients or on behalf of the public when it's a DA, I think is all a really important part of that process. You know, justice only works and our court system only works when people feel faith in the fact that the judges are not only listening, but they're keeping in mind all of the competing interests when they're hearing from victims of crimes, when they're hearing from parents of children, when we're hearing from tribal members. All of that is really important. So my judicial philosophy is to make sure that I listen and to make those reasoned decisions. I want to make sure that I'm not making decisions based upon who is standing in front of me, because that's not the person who feels the impact. It's the client. It's the person who is the one with the real dispute that matters. So setting aside those biases, setting aside the idea about I wonder what, you know, any of those questions, all of that should be put aside when a judge makes decisions. So I want to be very faithful to that. I intend on having a long career with the court where the community can count on me, where the advocates can count on me, and where families in New Mexico can count on me to listen to their dispute and treat them fairly.
Thank you, Judge Robertson. Essentially the same question, your judicial philosophy and how you view the cases before you, whether they're juvenile justice cases or dependency, neglect, and abuse kinds of cases, and what you would like our listeners to know about your philosophy.
Thank you, Judge Romero. I try to remember that the problem in front of me and the solution is likely just not about that person standing in front of me, but I want to consider that my decision affects who my decision affects and everyone then that can help address that problem. And of course, it all needs to be guided by the law. And that applies to both the delinquency cases and the abuse and neglect cases. For example, in a delinquency case, you know, it's not just about the child in front of me, but about the family and how the family can be helped and how the family can be part of the solution. And also about the victim and how the victim can be made whole and how the community can help this child with their resources and how the community can also be kept safe. And so I try to consider all of that when making my decisions. And sometimes it's certainly not easy and sometimes it takes time, but that's what I strive to do.
Judge Robertson, you touched on an issue that maybe needs a little bit more discussion, not necessarily with regard to philosophy, but in adult criminal cases, you're dealing with a defendant who is alleged to have committed a particular offense. In the juvenile justice system, you're dealing with a child before you, but you already mentioned that there's more to it than just the child. There's the family and a more holistic approach to dealing with the issue. Briefly, if you'd like to talk about how that might be different from, you know, in juvenile justice from adult criminal court.
Right, so the purpose of the delinquency code is not to punish the children that come before us, but to try to guide them onto the right path. And a lot of the times, they have issues at home, there's a lot of trauma that needs to be addressed. And that I think it serves the entire community by helping the entire family and not just the child. And that can be done, you know, with the help of our fantastic community that, comes together to offer mental health services, that offers mentorship, that offers, you know, after school activities or even just financial assistance for families.
Judge Romero, I think that Judge Robertson is right. What she's telling us is that rehabilitation and reintegration of the children back into the community is really critical. And so I agree with her 100%.
Too often we used to hear about kids. You guys are, I think you mentioned it earlier, Judge Begay, about just a slap on the wrist and they get away with things they shouldn't get away with. And we are, as a system, you know, these are our future taxpayers, our future citizens and leaders, and they shouldn't be throwaway kids, as very often is said about them. You know, you guys are too soft on them, deal with them, lock them up and throw away the key is the approach for many folks in the community. And on that subject, the issue of, you know, what can we as a system, not just judges, but juvenile probation, the community providers, what can we do to equip not just the young person before us in a juvenile justice case, but their families? What is in place, what should be in place that isn't, that each of you might wish to talk about? Judge Robertson?
Sure, thank you, Judge Romero. I'm a big believer that it takes a village to raise a child. And I think that it's incumbent upon everybody to step up and be there for the children in your family, for the parents in the parents and families in your life. The majority of the cases that we see in the abuse and neglect system, as I mentioned, are neglect cases. These are families struggling financially or parents suffering from drug addiction. And I think we have a duty to that next generation to be there in their lives however we can. And I know that it's not always easy or possible, but trying, I think, is extremely important. And I have to also add that we need our community in general. We need those community support services because we as the court can't solve those problems. We as the court cannot provide those mental health services or mentorship or financial help. That comes all from the community.
Thank you. And I believe that's a nice challenge to the folks listening, that it's not just about judges and probation officers and those who are involved in the system, but it is an issue that all of us need to deal with as a community. So Judge Begay, kind of transitioning to a related question, you know, in abuse and neglect cases, you know, we hear the parade of horribles that happen, and indeed they are horrible. They're very challenging to us. For me, when I was on the bench, to not get, you know, kind of dragged down by it and think about, will this ever end? But in the community, when it comes to neglect and abuse cases, what can the community do to lessen the frequency of these cases and helping those families? Because I think there was a project going on several years ago, maybe still going on, that preventing child abuse and neglect is everybody's business. Would you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. So Judge Romero, I sometimes have that feeling that you get too. And I think that's, these are some really horrific things that sometimes children in our community are going through. And by the time they hit your desk or the time that they hit my desk, I wonder who else knew something was happening before we got to this point. Who are those people along the way that should have said something or could have said something, but maybe were either too embarrassed or didn't know how to do that, or were worried about getting involved in family business? But these children need our protection from the very first time that you see something happening. I think that a lot of the supports that we have in place, keeping eyes on children in as many ways as we can is important. So teachers, when children are not attending school, teachers are usually that first line to say, where is this child? They haven't been here for 2 or 3 days. And then making that inquiry. People with religious organizations, so the pastor at the church or the Sunday school teacher who used to see a kid but doesn't see them anymore, or even neighbors who say, we used to have 3 kids who live down the block, what happened to them? Or how come we don't see them anymore? I don't see them on the way to school. Or sometimes you see them really suffering, right? They are homeless on the side of the road. You see a child wandering in the streets. I think it's really incumbent upon us to say something. There are so many organizations. I didn't know this until I actually began working with Children, Youth, and Families Department as an attorney, but there are lots of services in the community that parents just don't know about. I am an educated person, and I didn't know that those services were there. It took an organization like the Children, Youth, and Families Department to be able to say, not only are we gonna help refer to services, we're gonna help support you and your family through the process. Once I was really able to see that all these community supports were there, I understood how important it was that CYFD be that agency in the state of New Mexico to help bring together some of that work and that help. Our young people, Judge Robertson was talking about it earlier with the Fostering Connections cases. I think that's a really good effort to make sure that when children leave the foster care system at 18, that we still surround them and support them so that they don't instantly become homeless at 18, so that they have food on the table, that they can establish themselves with an education, and that we can do everything as a system to help support that this doesn't happen again. I don't know if that answered your question directly, but I think I was more struck by the fact that you had been doing this for years, and I still feel it within my first 8 or 9 months, that what our children go through sometimes is really devastating. And I want to be a part of the solution, right? I want to make it better.
Thank you, Judge Begay. And Judge Robertson, you kind of talked about that already in your previous discussion, but if you'd like to add more to that, please feel free to do so.
I'm not sure if I have anything else to add. I think that Judge Begay really did say it all. But just a reminder to everybody that, you know, we're all part of a community, and that if we're not happy with the community as we see it, then, you know, we need to do something about that and make sure that when you have a complaint, that you're not just complaining about the community you live in, but that you're also doing something about it.
Thank you. And what I, you know, if you'll allow me the liberty of interpreting what you all have said very eloquently, not that it needs any interpretation, but, you know, when we're dealing with juvenile justice cases, with neglect and abuse cases, it's not a CYFD problem. It's not a court problem. It's a community problem. And we're all part of that community. And just kind of what I heard you saying is it involves everybody in order to be productive and make changes so that we don't have these many cases. I think one of the things that I used to hear people say, and I think I heard it myself, you know, one of the best things that could happen is I would work myself out of a job and I didn't have to do this anymore because we didn't have these problems anymore. Of course, that's not going to happen, but you all are working very hard to do what the court system and being part of another system can do to contribute to solutions. One of the things we haven't talked about is the self-care, the importance of ensuring that you don't think you're superhuman and you can keep doing this forever without, you know, taking care of yourself. And I bring that up because trauma is a huge part of what the families that come before you are dealing with. And that trauma can be transferred to you in the form of vicarious trauma. So talk a little bit first about the trauma factor with the cases that come before you, and then how you deal with that vicarious trauma yourself, first being aware of it and dealing with it. Let me have Judge Begay address that, and then I'll go back to you, Judge Robertson. I know that for me personally, this is always a very emotional issue. And, you know, my wife was the one that was sort of my bumper that would keep me on track, you know, who would say, you need to take some time out. We need to take a vacation, whatever the world that means in the world of judging. But in any event, Judge Begay, if you'd like to talk about the trauma factor in your own self-care.
Sure, Judge Romero, I think you are 100% right. I mean, earlier you were asking me, you know, who in our community can work on some of these issues, and the fact that hearing these cases is really difficult. They really are. These are not, you know, often disputes between two adults where, you know, they were equal combatants, right? This is oftentimes infants, sometimes suffering some very difficult trauma that's even hard to talk about between judges and between even the participants in the system. It's hurtful, like as a human being to know that happened to a child. It is just devastating. But when you know that you're part of the solution, when you are there to help and protect and to try to make a way forward for this family that is better, especially for that child, that's in the child's best interest, that's important. But you cannot help but take in those stories sometimes. And it almost, I have found myself a couple of times almost paralyzed thinking, how am I going to move past this particular incident that I read about or heard about in a trial? And then I remember that, you know, in order for me to be effective, I really do have to step back. I have to say, this is the point where I can feel like I'm overwhelmed or I am suffering my own vicarious trauma, that I need to step back. And that's where your friends come in as being really important, where spouses are just as important. to help you say, you're an important part of my life. Let's make sure that your mental health stays on track. So I find time to walk with my friend in the evening a couple of days a week, just to sort of let it go and maybe hear about the drama that she had in her life that has nothing to do with my drama. When I first became a juvenile public defender, I had all these cases with these kids who were committing bad acts and who, you know, there was all sorts of things going on. I had a colleague at the time who told me, this, just remember, this is a small subsection of the community that we live in. Go to the high school football games, high school basketball games, go out in the community and go to the park and see the kids who are not involved in the system. And remember that what we're doing really matters to help get those kids back on track. And I thought that when he said that, it just opened my eyes to think he's right. This, what I'm doing is helping get kids back on track. This is not my whole entire community. I don't need to live in fear, right? And the community doesn't need to live in fear. I have a lot of things that I do as a pastime, Judge Romero, that you may remember. I really enjoy being outside where there isn't cell phone service, where there isn't internet, where I don't get to read about the news and to go camping, going on road trips, and really just disconnecting from that portion of my life, knowing it's there when I come back. But being able to step away, I enjoy being outdoors. And so I try to foster that as much as possible. I enjoy visiting our national parks. I think that's a huge, for me, that is a huge way for me to reconnect to nature and to get out there and enjoy all of those beautiful things that have been living for much longer than I have.
Thank you, Judge Begay. Judge Robertson, back to you if you'd like to add anything to what you were previously saying.
Thank you, Judge Romero. So dealing with hearing from the people that we serve about their trauma, I think is unfortunately just a part of this job. And I think that the more that you care, I think the more that you're affected by it, in all honesty. But you have to learn how to deal with it by, you know, sharing, I think, you know, how you're feeling with the people in your life. I also really enjoy being outside. I love reading. I am a big science geek. I go out to dinner every Friday. That's how I end my week with my husband. We go out to dinner and then, you know, we try to catch a movie or watch a movie at home, but it's how I unwind at the end of sometimes, you know, really hard weeks.
Awesome, that's really good. I know that if we don't have those other outlets in the work that we do, and I think it applies not just to judges, but to, you know, the other legal professionals, as well as the workers in juvenile justice and child welfare, you can get consumed by this, and it will take its toll if you're not mindful of the fact that we need to step away from it and realize that we're part of what's going on, but we're not to blame, or we're not to take the responsibility on our shoulders exclusively and say that kid failed or we had to terminate parental rights and somehow it's something I failed to do. When you do all you can already just by being there and with the attitudes that you have. So you each were appointed to the bench in January, as we discussed earlier. And, you know, pretty soon you will have been on the bench for a year. That probably has flown by for you. But are there things that you are experiencing being a judge that you didn't expect have added to your reality of being on the bench? I know some people, you say, well, you're a judge, you're high and mighty, you get to make all these decisions. But judging on what, you know, what you guys have already talked about, it's not that simple. And then there's the rules that judges have to live by, things that you have to keep your mouth shut about, you can't talk about. So Judge Robertson, if you'd like to talk about that first, you know, what things come with being a judge that you didn't expect?
Yeah, so I've had this conversation a lot, actually, with my husband, because as an attorney, you know when you're doing a good job because you win right? Or you get feedback from your clients or from their families, supervisors. And as a judge, you know, after you make a decision, no one is telling you, wow, judge, great job, unfortunately, right? So that measure of success, I'm still trying to figure out. You know, I try to be as prepared as possible, well-versed in the law, treat everybody with respect and compassion. But those measures that I was used to as an attorney, they're gone now. And so I'm still trying to figure that out.
Judge Begay?
I feel the same way too. It's a little hard to know when you're doing the right, when you're doing the right thing or when you've done it correctly. You know, there were some things that I had heard were going to happen and did, and I'm like, this is an example. So suddenly I'm the funniest person in the room. Suddenly everyone's laughing at my jokes. Everybody wants to have me attend their meeting. It's just, you start to wonder where that line is at, like who's being genuine and who's just, you know, attempting to stroke your ego. So I feel like I'm a little more discerning than I had to be before about that. But there are other things too, right? Like I have to be very careful about, you know, who I'm talking with or the associations that I have. I don't want anyone to ever second guess that, you know, that I'm not being fair or not being equal. So really, I think this may be a natural part of that. My associations now are with these entities that we talked about earlier, some of the associations, the national organizations and the local organizations. It's the way that I get to express myself and to work on issues important to me, but I'm not doing them on behalf of a single person or a single side. So having that ability to check myself all the time is important.
Thank you. And I'm sure each of you have heard, and some folks who are listening to this discussion have heard people in high places say, you know, being a judge is calling balls and strikes. And, you know, from what you've been discussing, obviously that's not the case in children's court, if it is in any trial court level. And you talked about the community. I mean, that's been a part of a word that has come up in much of the discussion. I had my predecessor tell me being a judge is more than just sitting in your chambers and in the courtroom. In order to really be an effective children's court judge, you need to get out in the community. Your court community, the folks that support what we do from the bench, but also the community outside the boundaries of the courthouse. How do you handle being in community meetings where people want to talk to you and want you present so you can speak and still not cross that line of being the neutral fact finder and decision maker without being influenced? Judge Robertson?
So when it's come up, I try to defer to whatever law is applicable to whatever it is that they're talking about. And I think going back to that and sounding as neutral as possible when discussing that law, it's been really helpful because it has come up. It has come up a few times, but I think just deferring back to that base that everybody, that we all have, is useful.
Thank you. Judge Begay?
I think I may take a different tact, which is I think when the public asks you these questions, like, how could you do that? Or why would you do that, you know, in this particular case? Or what happens if this and that, you know, being firm, not only with the public, but with the other communities that I'm in, that I can't have that conversation. I can't, my job is to be fair. So I'm not going to engage in that. That's for the lawyers to do when we're in court, where there is everybody represented and where fairness can be assured and where my mind can be appropriately focused on the issue, not outside of it in the courtroom. I think what the community wants is a promise. People in the legal community understand that you can't make that, but these are the people that we serve, and I think it's important for them to always feel that they should have faith in their judiciary, knowing that we are doing our best to maintain neutrality and confidentiality and abiding by the rules too.
Judge Robertson, Judge Begay, thank you both for the very important comments that you've made. And I thank you both for your commitment to families and children that come before you and your commitment to yourselves and your families as well, as far as ensuring that you continue to do the good work that you do. And I bless you both for taking on this role as judicial officers and for being committed to the work that you're doing in Children's Court. Thank you to the listeners for tuning in and hearing from two amazing judges, Judge Robertson and Judge Begay. And once the courts open up more, although they're open up a little bit, I believe each of the judges in cases where you're allowed to be in the courtroom, it wouldn't hurt to come and observe the great work that not only Judge Begay and Judge Robertson do, but the other professionals in the court and the attorneys as well. You all have a great day. Thank you so much for participating in this discussion.
Thank you so much, Judge Romero.
Thank you, Judge.
Thank you for listening. This episode was produced by the State Bar of New Mexico's Member Services Department, Second Judicial Court, and the Children's Law Section. All editing and mixing was done by Blue Sky eLearn. Intro music is by Kevin McLeod at Incomtech. The views of the presenters are that of their own and not endorsed by the State Bar of New Mexico. Nothing said in this podcast is legal advice for you.